So, welcome to this next lecture on program optimization. I realize that I should add more pictures into the slides. For example, for this deforestation, there is Phil Wardler, which I should give credit to having invented that kind of area of research, and this kind of strictness analysis, Alan Mycroft should perhaps be prominently shown. Alan Mycroft is I don't know what kind of rank he has. I think he's not a professor, but he's at Cambridge? Something like a, it's not a, I always get confused with the ranks which you have as a teaching professor-like profession at the British universities, and in clearly Cambridge and Oxford are, as you know, I think they have always the rank one in university rankings in the world. Have you ever been in Cambridge or Oxford? This is really a weird system, completely old-fashioned, and in some sense these cities, it's not so that there is a city having a university, but there are universities having a little bit of city around. So it's kind of a flipped classroom, if you like. And really an ancient system of teaching, but also kind of the atmosphere is overwhelming there, and he's in Cambridge, and so I guess if you are a professor at an ordinary university, this perhaps counts less than being a lecturer at Cambridge. So he came up, that was his PhD thesis actually, to observe that whether or not an argument must be evaluated, whether you can kind of describe this kind of property, which is an operational property, by means of a semantic property, which is strictness. And that was kind of his ingenious idea in his PhD thesis, by the way. Okay, so that is kind of, we have, now we were kind of, let me kind of come. So we have this factorial, we analyzed that. That was a, and I guess this was the thing which he considered in his thesis alone, that is, you have kind of atomic values, like that, here, integers. But now, last time, we realized that there could be data structures, and we also realized that if you have a big data structure and you have lazy evaluation, then it might be that you think of an infinite list. You require this list, but you do not require it in its totality. You only require the first element, and you would like to distinguish that. And so, therefore, at the end of the last lecture, we extended our little language with lists and tuples, and then we also. And then I said we would like to look at one humble first version of a strictness analysis, which I called top strictness. What is top strictness? Top strictness says we ask, will the root constructor of the constructed value ever be queried or not? And that is, there is kind of some more behind that, because if you have lazy evaluation, then you evaluate an expression always only to the topmost constructor. So that it, if you have a function returning a list and you call a lazy function for it, then it will terminate with a root constructor only and nothing else. And so if you want to see more of the list, you have to force evaluation. And that is kind of a show. You have to need a show function is required, which kind of prints every element of a data structure. And only this show function, evaluation of this show function, will trigger the evaluation of the whole program. So that's the thing. So now, and clearly, if top strictness, if you have int values interspersed in your list, in your data structure, then clearly, if the result is an int and or the argument is an int, and you prove that the function is top strict in that argument, then this means you have to evaluate this argument. That is. And now we already had a treatment. We gave rules how to evaluate expressions, and we take these rules and apply them whenever expressions have type int. But as soon as they do not no longer have type int, then we need further rules to deal also with sub-expressions of that other type. And so we do not replace our rules, but extend them by a treatment of lists and tuples. So therefore, now I do not list to you, repeat the same things as before, but conservatively extend it to expressions which also have that form. And note, and by that, doing it in this extensive way, I use the same kind of modeling. So it's again, an expression is mapped to 0 or 1. So we evaluate expressions over the Boolean lattice. So that means, for example, we have to evaluate an expression which is consists of an empty list. Now an empty list is, the root constructor is already there, so therefore the result should be 1. And the same holds if we have a list constructor applied to 2 expressions, no matter whether evaluation of these sub-expressions will terminate or not, the root constructor is already there, so therefore it is 1. And the same holds for tuple construction, because if you have a pair or pairs or tuples or what, then in that case the top constructor, which is the pair, is already there. So therefore all these things evaluate to 1 in the abstract setting. Okay? So now comes this one. So now we are here when we kind of compare an expression with a tuple. Now and we return another expression E1. And the expression E1 may refer to the components X1 and X2 of E0. Now what happens? So in that case, in order to apply this match expression, the E0 must be evaluated to the topmost constructor. Otherwise you can't apply that rule. Yeah, so that would therefore, if the E0, if evaluation to the topmost constructor, to the head, they call it also head normal form, if that will not terminate, then the whole thing will not terminate. So therefore, we take the mini, so that is, if E0 is mapped to 0, meaning that it will not terminate, then we have a 0 here and the whole thing is 0. Otherwise, so therefore there's the conjunction here. Please note that here's a conjunction now. And otherwise, if it is 1, then everything depends on the value of the expression E0. So the whole thing will possibly evaluate to a top constructor if the E1 now does. If the E0 has done and the E1 now does. Now the E1 is an expression which additionally has variables X1 and X2. But we know nothing about X1 and X2. So in particular, they might terminate. So therefore, they are mapped to 1. And in that environment, we evaluate the E1. Yeah. So I may kind of write a little example to illustrate that. So we have a match. The expression is, the expression. So how does the expression look like? So, the here. Match. And maybe it's just a variable, we don't know its value. With x1, x2. And what we return is, say, x1. Yeah, for example, this is the projection to the first component. And what would our analysis return? Well, in a environment row. So, well, we have to evaluate the set 1 has to be evaluated. So the row of set 1 is set, sorry, not set 1, but set. So, and then we have to take the minimum with the value of the main expression, this is the x1, in a variable assignment where x1 and x2 are mapped to 1, so that is x1 is 1, so is mapped to 1, so it's 1. So the whole thing may evaluate to something if the returns a may eval terminate have a terminating evaluation returning something in head normal form if set does so. So that is the result which we would get here. Okay. So that was with this case, this is if you like non-failing pattern it's kind of non-failing pattern matching. There's only one pattern to which E0 should necessarily be evaluated. Now let's look if we have a kind of if E0 is of a type of a list. So here we have two situations. So clearly E0 also must be evaluated to something with to head normal form, something with a root constructor. Otherwise we cannot make the case distinction. So that is we have again here E0 as one of the conjuncts of the result. And the second conjunct is, well, in that case, either the value of E1 or the value of E2. Now, for E1, there is no further variable, so we just evaluate it. And that is one possibility. And the other possibility is that E2 is evaluated. But now we have no information about the components of E0. Whether they will evaluate, they may evaluate to 1. So therefore, we have to evaluate the E2 in an environment where X and XS are mapped to 1, because they could possibly they might terminate. Their evaluation might terminate. Okay, so that's it. And now let's see if we do that for the function up and see what happens if we apply this analysis for that. So here is our fabulous up function. Now let's see what abstract interpretation for that system yields. So if we apply that, if we evaluate it for a B1, so that is the value for the first argument, and a B2, the value for the second argument of up, and then we evaluate the body here. So that is the B1 kind of think of that is fed in here. The B2 is fed in here, and then we evaluate this match expression. So the x1, the match thing is, okay, so we first have to take the value of x, this is B1, and then we have to do the conjunction with the value of this one or this one. And the first one is B2. And the second one is an expression which has already a root constructor, so therefore its evaluation is 1. You see, the recursive call has disappeared. So in this sense, solving this equation is very simple. We only have this one expression, which represents the abstract meaning of app, and simplifying, so we have this B2 or 1. This is 1. And B1 and 1 is B1. So that is B1. So this means, what do we see? So up is head strict, only in the first argument. So we can be sure that the first we can only be sure that the first argument must be evaluated when we want to have the root constructor of an app. And that is true. Because if the first is a constructed list, then we will never look at the why in order to determine the root constructor. So therefore we cannot be sure that the why will be evaluated. We can only be sure that the first argument is evaluated to the root constructor. And therefore the B1 is the best possible information we can hope for. Yeah? You see? Now there's another, so that was, in some sense, you see, it's not so difficult, and here that is kind of, we now therefore made kind of turn to another form of strictness, where we do not, where we want to know, we have such thing like a show function, which tells us that in the end, from the main expression of our program, we want to see the total result. Yeah, so that is, we want to print it simply, and then we might want to know if we have a function, of which we want to have its total result. What do we need to? What is required from the arguments? How much? To what extent can we be sure that the arguments must be evaluated? So this is total strictness. So again, we use this total strictness for integers is the same as top strictness for integers because there's only one constructor. So therefore, again, we can take our base analysis for integers and extend it with 0 and 1, with an evaluation of terms of type pair or list, can extend it to that case. And again having in mind that there is only two values, 0 and 1, and now for structured terms they mean kind of evaluation that the whole term is required. So how would we do the evaluation? So here it is like how. So now again let us see what we do with the. We start here with the simple cases. So if we the expression which you have to evaluate is just the empty list, what would the evaluation of that be? Well, okay, this is totally evaluated, so it will definitely terminate, or it may terminate, its evaluation may terminate, and therefore it is a 1. Now if I have an E constructor application to E1 and E2, so now the situation is more complicated because E1 and E2, we don't know. But both of them, the evaluation of them to a full term must terminate for both of them in order for the whole term to evaluate to completely, so that complete evaluation will terminate. So therefore it's conjunction in this case. And by tuple it's the same. So if you have a tuple and you want to have the full expression, then both of them must terminate. Okay? Both of them must terminate. And so that was kind of the easy cases. Now let's look at the more complicated cases. Again, now working up upward. The next complicated case is the case where we have a pair. And we ask, under which condition will this expression terminate? So clearly the E1 must kind of evaluate, the E1, it's not so clear to what it may terminate. So E0 must not be evaluated to a complete term. It suffices to evaluate it to kind of the root constructor, and then we have the. No, but it then has two components: the x1 and the x2. And now we have that their combination. So, I think. So you kind of make a picture. So here you have the E0. You evaluate it to two things, to an E01 and an E02. And because you have lazy evaluation, you will not immediately, the program evaluation will not immediately evaluate E01 and E02 to things. And so it might be that this one may not terminate, and that one may terminate. Or the first one definitely will not terminate, and the second one may terminate. So that's kind of the statement here. This could be, or you have a 1 there and a 0 there, or you have zeros in both. Or you have ones in both. Yeah, you have all these possibilities. And now, you then here in the right hand side, So if there are let me now briefly check. So if E0 evaluates to possibly evaluates to a determination, the full evaluation of E0 terminates. This means that both E01 and E02 also kind of possibly may terminate. So this in this case, so if E0 is 1, then you have 1 in both your components. And then everything is 1, and then we know nothing. But the interesting case is when this E0, we do not know, so E0 definitely may not terminate. So that is, the abstract meaning of this E0 will go to 0. In that case, either the first component or the second component will not terminate. And for the other, we don't know. So therefore, we don't know is one here. So therefore, in this case, we take one case, this one, and the other case, this one, and we don't know which one of them will apply. Therefore, we evaluate... sorry, I must make it this. So we have these two cases, and we evaluate both of them. Yeah. This is the case in when both of them, Okay. So the and so in this so now somehow this is kind of different from before, because before we had here just one expression we put, but now we have these. This disjunction of two evaluations of EX1 to take into account. Let us again look at this our situation where we have this where we I may make a new slide where we kind of considered this match set with x1, x2, and then return x1. Yeah, so that was kind of our more or less instructive example. And then we now kind of evaluate that for some row. And everything here depends on what value is assigned to set. So then, what is the result? Well, if, let us first consider the case row of set equals 1. Okay, that means that the evaluation of set definitely will terminate. That means x1 and x2, the two components, will also terminate, and therefore we have 1. Now if row of set equals 0, so that's the other case, so then in this case, either x1 or x2 will definitely not terminate. Okay, we don't know whether x1 is will not terminate or x2 will not terminate. So therefore, we will have, in that case, either 0 or 1. Yeah, which is also 1. So that in this case, we will always have 1. Okay. And now, yeah, perhaps it's disappointing that I kind of made a complicated evaluation. It all was one, but that's the thing what the analysis here would give us. So simply we would not know. Now let's see what happens in this, if then, if we have this match expression for a list. Now we have two possibilities. The first thing, again, we have to evaluate the everything that may depend on whether the evaluation of E0 will terminate or not. So let, again, this be the value B. What then do we do? Okay, so if B does not does not terminate, then it could be that B is that E0 is the empty list, and then the whole thing will not terminate. So therefore, it's the minimum. So if B is 1, then we might have So if B is 0, then So assume first. Sorry, I kind of was too quick once again. So this is our situation which we want to look at. The first thing, let us assume that this E0 should evaluate to the empty list, and it does not terminate, and that in that case we are here, and either it does not terminate, so it's the minimum of the B and the value of E1. So it might if E1 terminates, yes, then it definitely terminates, and that means that it is it could evaluate to the empty list. But then if the E1 which is chosen may not terminate, then the whole thing may not terminate. And otherwise, in the else part, this is the else part is in that case the. If E1 may not terminate, but E0 may not terminate, but at least the root constructor is there, so therefore it's fine. The root constructor is there, and then we might it might be that the two components, the head and the tail of the list, one of them may not terminate. So, and in this case, we have to again consider two situations, namely these two, and take the OR. So either the X gets then false and the X's gets 1, or vice versa. And in both, for both situations, you must evaluate the body of this alternative, which is the E2, and then take the least upper bound of these. Okay, so we now, by applying that kind of, these kind of rules to the up function, you will... The up function contains such a match, and therefore we can see what that means in a concrete program. So here down there is this up function. So it's the match, the match expression for which we now have to provide the corresponding Boolean formula. So what do we have in that formula? So on the right hand, so the match expression. So there was the case for the empty list. The case for the empty list resulted in that pair. Because what do we have to do? Well, either the condition, the expression on which the pattern matching applied. The case distinction is applied, so that is if that does not terminate, and the expression E1 that was E1 for the alternative of the empty list, if that does not terminate, if one of them does not terminate, the whole thing may not terminate, and that in this case the expression E1 is just the second argument, so the abstract value is the B2, and the expression E0 is the B1, so therefore it is this conjunction. This is the first case. Now come for the constructor case, for the if the list is a constructed list. In that case, we have to take two situations into account. One is this situation, and the other is that situation. The first situation is that the head definitely does not terminate, or may not terminate, and then and for the second argument, that definitely will terminate, and so that is kind of results in this kind of expression, because the B1 is the head, and then up is recursively applied to the tail, which we have assigned the value 1, and the B2, which is the Y. This is the second argument. And now the alternative is that the head may terminate, so it receives the 1, and the B, and for the tail, we consider different cases, namely this is it depends on the B1. Okay? So we have now these two calls and the disjunction with these two kind of expressions, and we have to take the disjunction of all three possibilities. So, that's it. And now let's kind of first a little bit simplify and then try to solve that fixed point equation. So simplification, the first thing what we do is we observe one and something, this goes away. Okay, and then we could simplify, no, we cannot simplify further. That's it, and now we kind of start the fixed point iteration. Okay, now how does the fixed point iteration work? So first we assume that B1 and B2, so the first... that the up is the constant zero function. This is the smallest possible situation. The smallest possible situation. We start with that and then try to check what will, if we plug that into the right-hand side, evaluate what do we get out. So that means, here we plug in for that, the constant zero, and for that, the constant zero. Yeah? Now, let us check. So, or zero is kind of can be removed. Then we have, it remains. Now, I write it so you can see. Yeah, a B1 and 0 is 0, so that means this goes away, and we have B1 and B2. Okay, so the next function is, please take the conjunction of the arguments, which is a Boolean function which is exceeds the value constant 0. Now let's plug in that function into our equation, so here, and see what happens. So if we do that, what happens then? So here we get B1 and B2, or, and now my break, so B1 and 1 and B2, or the third one is B1 and B2. You see? And now you check these three expressions, these three conjunctions. All of them are essentially B1 and B2. So, plugging B1 and B2 into the right hand side of this equation, therefore results in conjunction. So, therefore, we have reached a fixed point, and that means the abstract meaning of the append function is conjunction. And that is now, again, the best what we could hope for. Because if you want to see the complete result of append of two lists, then clearly the first list must fully be available, and the second list also must be fully available, because the result consists of these two things. And therefore, if one of them will not terminate, if one of these arguments is not provided, then the result never can be provided. So in that sense, the analysis result is meaningful. Yeah. And now note, so we compared to top strictness, we obtained in the example a different result, but that is not surprising. Then because we changed the rule for constructor application significantly, so they look completely different. And in particular, we had this when we decompose the value, we had to take into account that the components could have different values, and we kind of had to take any possible decomposition into account, and therefore there we had this OR for the tuple as well as for the list. Okay. Yeah. And now, but clearly, whether or not the result of a function is totally required depends on the context of the function call. And also whether or not the root of a tree, of an argument is required depends on the context. So, this means that in different contexts, different functions might be called. And that means that we kind of have to, might introduce now, in order to exploit that, a new function which represents the up function in a context where the argument, the result, is queried in total. So that is this up hash. So this is now a specialized function. And what would we say? What would we do there? We would say, okay, the first argument must be provided. I can compute it beforehand. The second argument can be evaluated beforehand. And then I do the matching. And then I just return the second argument. Or I do the matching, and then I say, please evaluate the right hand side in total, and that means that the x which is already evaluated is just taken, and I should kind of say, here I take the x prime, and here I pass the y prime, and no, sorry. No, it's not true, because what did I do? So here's something strange going on, and that is, the strange thing is here, that this should be on the other side. I do this, I match the x prime, and the result is the y prime, and here the components are evaluated, so therefore I can put it directly here. I can place the y and the xs directly here, and then call this function up hash again, and then that value is returned here. So by that I kind of enforce that there's no closure anymore, but it's all completely evaluated. Okay. So that is the way how I could kind of exploit this total strictness to improve, to make a specialized up function in a situation where I'm sure that the full result would be required. And so now what can we conclude from that? So the first thing what we conclude is that both types of strictness analysis employ the same lattice. So it's always the zero, one kind of thing. And so the results are different, and also the application of the analysis information is always a little bit different in the two cases. And also there is kind of a different, these two analyses differ also in how the description relation between concrete values and abstract values are defined. So, now what are the concrete values if I have structured terms? So now intermediately, so in the concrete I make a new kind of page here. If I have a list, now I make it blue. If I have a list, say 1, 2, the first elements are there and the rest of the list is not there. So this could be a possible value. This means iteration. So, and you could, well, that is kind of a better value than having a list 1 hash, and they could have even a worse value, which is kind of just that. Not 1 hash, but 1 bottom. So you see, so kind of going, becoming larger is in the concrete world, means that expressions or that values become more and more defined. So you start with the undefined value, and then you start evaluating, and then you produce some part of it. So here, some initial part of a list, and then this initial part will grow until you have a total value. Yeah, and you see by that it is different from what we had in imperative languages, for constant propagation. There we thought, we start with bottom, and then this is value has not yet, or there is not yet a value, and then we evaluate, and then we end up in a variable assignment, mapping every variable to a value 5, 6, and 7. Yeah, so that was one go. One, so it was a flat thing, but now it's no longer flat. It goes, it may increase arbitrarily wide, in the concrete world. Okay, so there's no top value. So in that sense, something like that, people call it's not a complete lattice, it's a complete partial order. We will not elaborate on that, but you may just see that now there are different values. Now, and let's say what for top, how we abstract values in that world. Yeah. So in the top strictness thing, that is abstracted by 0, and everything else is described by 1, because everything else has at least a top constructor. Yeah. So this is kind of the situation if we have top, if we only consider top strictness. What happens if we consider total strictness? In total strictness, we would map a value to describe it by 0 if it contains a bottom. Yeah, if it definitely contains a bottom. So in that case, we would map all these things to 0. And only if we have a value without bottoms, then it will be mapped to 1. No, that's not completely true. The 1 describes something which may not contain a bottom, but it may also contain a bottom, because it's always like that. If you go to a larger value, then you describe all the things which are described by smaller values and a little bit more. So if you have 1 describes all of them and also the value containing no bottom at all. Okay, and now let's go to this thing. So once again, so that is our description relation. So we only fix what is described by 0, and so in top strictness, the point is that 0 describes only the bottom element, and in total strictness, 0 describes every value which contains a bottom. And values which do not contain a bottom are described also by 1. Yeah. Okay, and and now we could kind of, you may wonder, but that's kind of a little bit now of an academic exercise, what can we combine the two analyses? And the answer is yes, we can combine an analysis. We could kind of design a lattice like this one. So it has a 0, a 1, and a 2. And 2 now means total strictness. One means top strictness, and zero means this one, this two says, this describes everything, and in particular it describes the values which do not contain bottom. The one is a little bit, describes all values which may be, it describes all values where there is a top constructor or which are bottom, and this one describes things which the zero describes really bottom alone. Z contains so here I should say that is a little bit, Z is a value or bottom or contains bottom. Yeah, because this is the two describes everything. And now, clearly this lattice is more informative because it allows us to differentiate between more things. And but it has a disadvantage that this lattice is not a 0-1 lattice, and therefore it's richer and you have more monotonic functions, and then you can it is more difficult to combine. One has to think a little bit on how to express the abstract meaning. Here I have tried to make an exercise how the abstract evaluation over that lattice can be formulated. I think I suggest, since our time is, we have only today and a little bit tomorrow, so that we that I do not elaborate on that, but only mention that one could do such an evaluation with this lattice 0, 1, 2. And here I even have an example where I try to evaluate that, but I leave it with that. And only mention that this lattice clearly is you could elaborate it even further by saying that you distinguish how much an expression is, a value is available, by saying it is available up to depth D, for example. And only that the bottoms are below the D. So this gives us a deeper lattice. And the question is only, the analysis would be can be defined in the same line as before. The only problem which one has is how to exploit this more precise information, and that is the critical point. But let us now mention two interesting things here. So the first thing is, it is, in the example, we looked only at, we considered that strictness business for programs manipulating tuples or lists. But there's nothing specific with lists. One could apply that also to programs which have any other kind of user-defined data structures. And that means, in particular, and also we have restricted ourselves to functions with which are first order. And that is, there's also no point in this restriction. We could also apply the same thing to higher order functions. The only thing is that the only problem there is that there are many. So, for example, if you pass two, you have a function taking a functional argument, and you have to feed in every possible abstract value which this function could have, and then describe the result for all of these. And now the number of abstract functions grows with the complexity of the type significantly, and therefore, and this makes, this is kind of the drawback of all this strictness analysis business, that is, as soon as you have higher order abstract functions, then the analysis very soon breaks down. So it's not so difficult if one has if one looks only at functions like map, fold, or loop, but because they're only unary functions or binary functions are required, and there are sufficiently few. So, for example, the now if you think of the map, I make again a kind of an example for the map function. You want to describe what the abstract meaning of a map function. This is something in the first argument. It takes a function. It is something in, we need the Boolean lattice for a particular type, namely for from there to there. And then the second function is a list, so it's a something of that. And the next the result is then a Boolean value. And here, so now if you think of how many functions do we have? Okay, so how many functions can we so we need unary monotonic, so all these functions will be monotonic. So unary monotonic functions, how many are there? So there's the constant zero, there's the identity, and there's the constant one. These are three. Three possibilities here. And now here, this is two possibilities. So therefore, the value table, if you like, is the monotonic functions from six elements to 0, 1. So that is acceptable. So that is the map we can do, and the fold. So then you have for the fold, say fold left. Then you have a B to B to B. So these are now binary functions here to B. And here, let us again count how many functions there are. Here are the monotonic binary functions, and there is the constant zero, the constant one, the left projection, the right projection, the and the or. So these are six functions. So these are six, and then the next argument is two. So it's two times six, so that is 12. So 12, you have to tabulate the result for 12 arguments. So this makes it, again, a little bit more difficult than to describe than the map function, but still reasonable. But you see, if you have even higher order functions, which are then the problem becomes increasingly difficult. Okay, so kind of, but then one has to look at what kind of, how complicated are functions in practice. And if you think that map and fold are virtually the most complicated higher order functions which a programmer would use, then strictness analysis would go through smoothly. Okay, so now let's go back. That was map and fold. And then there is there is something, I'm not completely sure whether we should go into that. I may only mention another thing. So we had to compute with these value tables, And this value table, dealing with value tables and these Boolean functions is how can we deal with Boolean functions? And therefore, maybe I kind of skip this thing here and kind of instead discuss, give you another final background, how one would compute with Boolean functions. And one possibility to compute with Boolean functions is to apply binary decision diagrams. So have you ever heard of binary decision diagrams? And so that is a reasonable way. So a reasonable, I would say, final kind of technique which might be of general purpose, give general purpose information which you might apply also in other applications. So now what is that? So our problem is, so we have such functions to represent. Okay? That's now, so even if you have not, were not kind of so happy with strictness analysis of functional programs, this is now an algorithmic problem. How do we deal with such functions? And what do we know about such functions? So these are Boolean functions with n arguments, and then one thing which we know is many problems for Boolean functions are difficult. So, for example, proving that two Boolean functions are the same. This is a difficult problem. It is one of the NP-complete problems. So, and here, when I said, okay, we do this, we make this, in our application, the Boolean function had few arguments. So there is, for five arguments, you don't arrive at an NP-complete problem. But still, you have to kind of deal with these kind of Boolean functions. How can you do it? So here is the idea. So the idea is we represent Boolean functions by decision trees. So that is the first idea. So what is a decision tree? So a decision tree is, well, if you have a result, then the decision tree has just a leaf stating this result, 0 or 1. Okay, so this is this one. And now if you have if you have a function with more arguments, you take the first argument and you query this argument. And if it's 1, then you apply, you kind of provide the function with 1, and then you take the rest of the function. And otherwise you kind of evaluate, you pass 0 to the function and continue. So here is an example. You have this function with 3 arguments, and you have this Boolean expression. I wrote it now with more Boolean more Boolean operators. For example, the conjunction here and the equivalence. So this equivalence operation would not occur for strictness analysis, but it might occur in other applications. And in particular, it would occur in the case of the analysis of logic programs. So we have this kind of so now we want to represent that. So I said, okay, we do we create one node here where we ask the x1, and in the case of 0 we proceed here with a function where 0 is passed to that function, and 1 if 1 is passed to that function into the x1, and then we kind of evaluate for the x2 and so on. So this would mean here, if we pass 0 into that function, then 0 and this is the constant 0 function. Yeah? So I write it so it's a function where you could query the other arguments, but in all leaves you will always have the 0. Okay? So now if x1 is 1, then the 1 and something is something, so we have there for the subtree a decision tree to construct for x2 is equivalent to x3. Now, when is x2 equivalent to x3? So now we query x2. If x2 is 0, then x3 also must be 0. And here we would have a 0, and here the same. In the other case, we again query the x3, And in case of zero, we then would arrive at zero. And in case of one, we would arrive at one. So it's a kind of ugly thing. I hope, yeah, here's the tree. Yeah? So now this is a, what can we say about this decision tree? It's a nice tree, but it's a huge tree. Because if you have n arguments, the tree has exponential size. Now this is not so nice. So now there's an interesting situation. We might want to kind of collapse this tree a little bit. So how can we collapse that tree? Now the first thing what we can do is we could share isomorphic subtrees. So this makes it a DAG. So like that. Yeah? So the first thing is we share isomorphic subtrees, and these need only to be represented once, so we arrive at a DAG. So it's a DAG compression of a tree. And this makes it often significantly smaller. Exponentially large trees may shrink to polynomial size. And then we could do something more. So we could say, okay, so here for that node, for example, the two subtrees are the same. So why should we query x2? It does not depend on x2, so we remove it. And the same for the x3. So that would be the third idea. And this gives us results in that kind of thing. So now here's no sharing, but there is a little bit of sharing if you represent the 0 and the 1 only once. But at least this would be a second kind of optimization. And the result is reduced ordered decision diagrams. And that is this one. And these are kind of BDDs. And at some point there has been a huge hype because this is a unique representation of Boolean functions. If you have two Boolean functions and you make them construct these reduced decision diagrams, then you can decide equality efficiently because you only have to show that they are isomorphic. And what people also do is kind of if they have an application operating which requires to consider multiple Boolean functions, then they construct a single unique table, which they call, consisting of nodes, and each node is one function. And then if you have several functions, then they would be kind of represented by the same node. So that means equality of functions boils down just to checking whether two things are the same. And that is easy. Yeah. And then people have used that this. Now the question is, so there are many questions, but at least by that they have solved the representation problem. And also they found that for many interesting Boolean functions, the representation by such a BDD, binary decision diagram, is small and much less often than one would have guessed. Exponential blow-up occurs. And therefore, it is a nice data structure from an engineering and practical engineering point of view. And then people, there is this, you maybe have heard this model checking thing, or when people try to verify hardware components, hardware components to a certain degree contain combinatorial circuits, and they tried to construct for these combinatorial circuits BDDs. And then they could had a specification also represented by a BDD, and then they could check whether they are the same. And so by that, they could verify automatically that certain parts of a hardware design are correct. And that is kind of, if you think of that, you have to check a Boolean function by trying all arguments, which is a kind of a hopeless endeavor, then this kind of was a major breakthrough, these BDD things. And the people were extremely happy about these BDDs. And when I say BDDs, they did not construct BDDs for Boolean functions with 5 arguments, but with hundreds, or at least, I would say hundreds of arguments. and then things is clearly, then you would manually be completely lost. And with other tools, completely lost. And also clearly now, why was it so successful to deal with these BDDs? Well, the question, so one thing is, you may hope that your representation of a Boolean function is small. But then you have to do something with a Boolean function. You do not only have to check for equality, you also have to do kind of apply conjunction, for example. You have two BDDs already. Now you want to do the conjunction of it because you want to simulate an AND gate. What would you do? Do you have to flatten it out again into something, into value tables, and then that would be ridiculous. So you would always like to stay inside the BDD world and do all the Boolean operations which are available. So the question is, how can we do the conjunction? And then the point is, you can do it. You need not kind of unfold into trees. You can do it on the decision diagram directly. And so here is kind of how you would do it. You kind of simply apply, well, if you have two nodes which you have to do to compare, then you do the conjunction there. If you have two functions which query the same variable x, then you query the x, and then you pass, you do the recurse, you recursively call the conjunction again. And the same holds true for existential quantification and for negation, and in that sense, if you kind of evaluate operations bottom up, then you can all the whenever you for example the F1 if you have already once evaluated that, then you simply look it up in the UNIC table, and that in the end makes results in that all the operations on BDDs, all the Boolean operations which are necessary, including existential or universal quantification, can be executed polynomial in the size of the BDD. So you start with the BDD, every operation is polynomial on the BDD. Now clearly, if you execute an operation n times, and everything kind of squares the size of the input, then clearly after n iterations you will have an exponentially sized thing. You might have, but at least each individual operation is polynomial. Yeah. And now you may so, as I said already, these were invented to kind of do something like circuit verification. You kind of translate your hardware design into a BDD and then do check whether that is. And you have your specification, which is also a BDD. You compare these BDDs for equality or implication or something, and all that can be done in polynomial time, given that the sizes of the BDD stays polynomial. And but that is the basic thing. But now later people also thought, even if I have programs, I could kind of whole systems, other systems, not just one hardware component compiled into silicon, but also other things like protocols or something, or even programs. You could kind of, you succeed to encode the state of your program and the transition, the individual step of your semantics in a BDD, then you kind of can execute your program on a BDD. And that is kind of, that is what people also have done and tried, and but that could try to compute, for example, a BDD for all representing all reachable program states or system states. And that if there are quite a few systems where this is successful, namely, and people try to analyze systems in that way, and that is still one, and there are implementations of BDDs and BDD packages which you can kind of install on your system and use, so they are ready made for using. So that is nice, but as whenever a technology is successful, then people try to apply it whenever possible. And then clearly there are limits to it. And one thing is that in some cases the NP difficulty kind of is shows up. And that means in some cases these BDDs become although often they are small, in some cases they are large. And that is kind of that is the one thing. And then if you compute with these very large BDDs, then it's very crucial in which it turns out that it is crucial in which order you kind of arrange your variables. X1, X2, X3 might be a good one. X3, X2, X1 might be a bad one. And here is an example. Consider, for example, this situation where you check for whether X1 is equivalent to X2 and X3 is equivalent to X4. So here to the left I have a very small one, a very small BDD representing this function, and where I have chosen an ordering here, where I have chosen an ordering first X1, then X2, then X3, then X4. So those variables which are checked for equality are close to each other. Yeah, because then you have to memorize the value of X1 only one layer down, and the value of X2 only one layer down. Now, if you, on the other hand, you have a stupid ordering where you kind of first, the ordering is X1, X3, X2, X4. Then the value of X1 kind of must be memorized two levels down, and that means for every combination you now have a different subtree, a different behavior for every possible combinations of X1 and X3. And likewise, if you have, you can now easily generalize that. If you kind of go X1 to X2n, and then you first have X1, X3, X5, X7, and so on, then the values of all these variables kind of result in a distinct behavior. So you have a tree, an exponentially large tree there, which then which gets exponentially broad and then goes down again. So in that sense, the ordering of variables matters. So, and here I have even an explicit calculation how large this BDD would be if you have if you check these equivalences for 2n variables. And now, and this phenomenon which we have observed here for equivalence, so this means if you have kind of a number and two numbers, X and Y, and you want to you have represented the numbers by bits, and you want to prove, check equality of these numbers, then this means you have to compare bitwise all the two numbers. And this is exactly this formula here. So in this sense, this is not an artificial formula. It's just a formula for implementing equivalence of equality of numbers in hardware or in a BDD. So this means if you compute on two numbers, you better shuffle the bits representing these numbers so that you have corresponding bits close to each other in the ordering of your, in your variable ordering, so that the equality becomes easy to check. So that is the first thing which one has to take into account. And this ordering, therefore, has to be applied to BDDs representing addition. Yeah, because also there, neighboring bits must be added. And if they are far away, you have to kind of memorize all possibilities. Yeah, so that is kind of goes exponentially up. So if you want to implement or represent addition by a BDD, then better use a kind of shuffle the the variables representing the different bits of the argument in appropriately. Okay, so that shuffling is important in order to do to represent arithmetic by BDDs, but it is not. But that has limitations because multiplication is notoriously difficult. We have found that in logic, multiplication may cause undecidability. And here on the BD, if you want to represent multiplication, for example, the last bit or middle bit of multiplication by means of a BDD, then you will find that no matter what ordering you choose for the variables representing the two input numbers, multiplication will always have an exponentially large BDD. So in that sense, multiplication is BDDs and multiplication do not go together. And the same holds true for indirect addressing. Indirect addressing is important if you use BDDs for representing your memory and you want to do your program execution, then you iterate over an array, for example, in an indirect way. So that means you have indirect addressing and not only direct addressing. And all that indirect addressing will cause BDDs to blow up. And that means that data-intensive programming cannot be realized by BDDs. And then for these, one would have to go for other representations of Boolean functions. And that is now then something interesting has happened that so. In the examples for strictness analysis, I have shown you Boolean expressions, and then at some point a few years ago, the Boolean expressions have experienced a revival in form of conjunctive normal forms. So you have heard of the SAT-solving problems. So there, people have started to represent Boolean functions again as conjunctive normal forms and have provided basic decision procedures for that. And now you would say, conjunctive, that is all NP-complete. Yes, it's true, but these SAT-solvers still are amazingly efficient, and the technology there, the algorithms applied there, now nowadays beat binary decision diagrams. So they can deal with much larger Boolean functions nowadays due to these sophisticated algorithms which they have built into these SAT solvers. And that is so the method of choice if you want to do these kind of hardware verification and system exploration by means of encoding everything by means of Boolean functions, then the method of choice nowadays is all based on these SAT solving technology. And that has been for some years now quite an exciting field. And again, a lot of engineering went into these SAT solvers to get fast implementations there. And I guess if you check your Linux distribution and search for Minisat or maybe also Picosat, then you can easily download, install on your system such a SAT solver, which has a very simple interface which you can readily use. So that makes life there again exciting. And now coming back to strictness analysis, or here our Boolean functions are comparatively small. So if we don't have higher order functions, then the functions would have the number of variables. There would be, say, 10 at most. And that is in this range, SAT solving is overshoot, is not necessary. So in that sense, BDDs still are an interesting technology, when Boolean functions may be large and ugly and you have to operate on them, but they are not too huge. And so therefore, if you asked me how to implement strictness analysis, then I would always say use BDDs. Okay, so that finishes my little excursion on BDDs. Now, the next topic here would be the analysis of logic programs such as Prolog, but I guess that would kind of be a little bit too much for just one lecture, and therefore I would say we kind of stop here. If you have any questions, so we have this this presentation for the projects. We kind of scheduled for Monday, was it? So Monday is Fasching, but I hope this doesn't bother you. So we will do it in the morning, and then hopefully, because after lunch, I guess there will be no lunch here, so we have to leave anyway. But I guess or was it in the afternoon? At 2 o'clock. So I will talk with Stefan. Probably we should kind of better do it in the morning. Then I check the schedule. We immediately send out the email, because if there is no lunch here, then it's better to have it in the morning, and we can go home for lunch later. Yeah. So then, therefore, let's. I guess when we kind of discussed with him the time, I had completely forgotten about Carnival, but I try to schedule it at 10. So I guess that would be a nice date. Okay. So thank you very much for your attention, so then we see us not tomorrow morning, because we are done. But we see us on next Monday.